Hey, everybody. I'm C.
I'm Jen.
And you're listening to Tomtit and Baobab.
Welcome back to Tomtit and Baobab, the New York Times Spelling Bee-inspired podcast that's all about words, word games, and the word nerds who love them. Now, as word nerds, we talk quite a bit on this show about dictionaries, and about one dictionary in particular, Merriam-Webster.
Oh, are you going to tell me you found another mistake in Merriam-Webster?
Well, that depends on what you consider to be a mistake. So what I'm going to ask you is whether you know what Merriam-Webster chose as their 2023 word of the year.
So is it two words?
I feel like it's one word.
Bob told me there were two. There's one, and then it's like opposite is also the word of the year. It was like the runner-up.
Maybe not Merriam-Webster. Maybe that was a different dictionary.
Okay, so tell me. Tell me, what is it?
Authentic.
Yes, and then the opposite, the runner-up was...
Well, there were a whole bunch of runner-ups.
No, but it was the opposite of authentic. Whatever the other word is, it's like authentic and then...
Deepfake was on the list of possibilities.
It was authentic and deepfake. This is what Bob told me.
There were like 10 other possibilities. Authentic and deepfake. So what do you think about that?
Well, apparently you have a problem with it. So tell me.
Oh, I don't. I just wanted to know what you thought, because actually the way I found out about it is that Jared emailed it to me, the article, and said, lame, exclamation point. And so I didn't want to say that because I wanted to see if you thought it was lame, but you clearly are cool with it.
Well, I have to admit, when Bob told me that it was authentic and deepfake, which obviously I already forgot, it didn't really resonate with me. Deepfake, actually, I thought was an interesting, I mean, do you count it as a word of the year, but it's always a weird thing. So I thought, huh, and it's the opposite of deepfake. I liked it. How's that?
I kind of agree with you. I like it better in the context of deepfake, and I don't hate it. Jared seemed to have hated it.
Wait, you didn't ask him why?
No, because I wanted us to talk about it first. I didn't want to be biased.
I wish Jared was here. I always wish Jared was here. Why did they pick authentic?
Well, apparently it's a word that people have been looking up a lot consistently throughout the year. And I think it's because of like AI and deepfakes and, you know, people generally talking about being authentic, which it's one of these things that I think is really interesting, because I'm not sure that we know what authentic is anymore.
Ooh, we're getting very deep. What do you mean? Explain what you're talking about.
Everybody lives their whole lives on social media, and we have all this like fake information and deep fakes, and who knows what is real anymore.
Well, is that why people are looking up?
I don't know. Merriam-Webster specifically in the article that I read said that they don't provide an explanation of why people are looking it up. They just are noting that people are looking it up.
Right. But don't you think it's a weird word to look up? Maybe people are looking it up because they're writing about authenticity and they're looking to see how to spell it. What do you think about that?
I think that authenticity is not a difficult word to spell.
But it's enough that, like, I could imagine looking it up.
And the
though.
Word wasn't authenticity. It was authentic.
Well, I could see, like, you'd look up authentic.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Like, they're just giving one. So maybe for that. On the other hand, doesn't everyone have spell checker? So.
Well, then you're inauthentically a good speller.
Anyway,
I don't know how I feel. I'm still on the fence about the word, but one thing I definitely find problematic about it is that it has 8 unique letters in it, which means it will never count in the B.
How is that too many letters for the B? But arthralgia is just right.
Well, my joints do hurt a lot as I get older.
My joints are okay, but that word hurt my head.
That word hurt my soul.
You win.
You know what actually made me feel better about arthralgia?
Pilates?
Yes, but no. Tim Alborn.
I think you need to explain, Jen.
All right. As anyone on the New York Times Spelling Bee Facebook page knows, Tim Alborn writes daily limericks using words from the Bee.
And he wrote one about arthralgia?
He did.
Are you going to read it to us now?
No.
Wait, why?
Because we're going to ask Tim to read it.
Awesome. That's right, folks. Later this episode, we'll be joined by the extraordinary, inordinary, Bee Limerick writer, Tim Alborn.
So stick around.
First, it's time for The Week in Bee. is the part of the show where we talk about bees from the previous week. Today, we're starting with Saturday, November 25th, and ending with Friday, December 1st. Jen, can we start with arthralgia? Can we start with arthralgia? What was your experience of getting that word or not getting that word?
I didn't get it. That my experience was that I did not get it. I think I have it, but I did not realize that.
And it was the pangram, right? Was it the only pangram?
No, there were two pangrams that day.
Didn't it drive you crazy not to have the pangram?
Yeah, but you know what? I'm gonna make a confession right now at the top of this week in bees. My confession is that I was a really bad bee doer this week.
Bad bee doer? What happened? Too much turkey?
I don't even eat turkey. Too many mashed potatoes. No, I don't know. It's just been a really chaotic kind of a week, and everything has felt kind of off. And I mean, I've been doing the bee, and, you know, I think I got to genius every day because that's, you know, it's what I do.
That's what I do.
But I think I've, like, not really tried to get queen. I've gotten it a couple of times, but I haven't really tried this week, and I've given up early on a few.
You played like a normal person. I like
it. Normal person.
Okay. All right. Did anything else bug you?
Wait, I wanted to hear what you thought about arthralgia.
Oh, well, so that word really bugged me because I don't like not getting the pangrams, right? So I don't care about getting queen. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But the other thing is, if it's bingo, I have to get the bingo. Mm-hmm. And if there's a pangram, I have to get the pangram. Like, that's just my things that I have to do. So that day, what day was it? Arthralgia?
It was the Sunday, the 26th.
Okay. So, and that day, oh my God, that day was a nutty day. I wasn't even home. I mean, like, anyway, I had people at my house. Like, there was a whole thing. So I was like, shit. Oh, I was like, crap. I have to get the pangram. And I wasn't seeing it all day. And then I was like, wait a minute, there's Earth there. It's an art. Like, you know when suddenly something just like deep in your head and you're like, that's the word. It's something to do with this. No, and that's the thing. That's what annoyed me. What I did, the way I cheated to get this is like, I was like, this is the word. Let me start like kind of Googling.
Okay, because I was going to say, how did you even like put that together?
I cheated to get it, but like I got it because I guessed what it was going to be basically. And, you know, it makes sense given like arthritis, but I work with people with arthralgia, I guess, all the time. I've heard lots of weird physio kind of words.
Yeah,
I've never heard that word. I don't understand why he would count it. I mean, I don't hate knowing it.
Yeah.
It's not like the worst word on earth, but I'm assuming people were like out of their minds mad because it's crazy.
I don't know if people were mad, but they were definitely like, what is this? Like, I think a lot of people missed it.
Yeah, I think it's a responsibility to make your pangrams words. Yeah, I kind of agree
with that. I do. It's funny because you texted and you asked, I don't know whether you texted me and your mom or me and Leslie, and you said, has anybody gotten the second pangram yet?
Right, because I was like, am I just an idiot? Like, why am I not seeing this?
Right. And then after you said that, you said something about that you got the root and then...
Right. I told you how I got it.
Yeah. And then I started to look for roots and I tried every agri.
Yeah.
I was thinking like agriculture and I tried everything I could possibly think of. And then I was like, Yeah.
That's silly.
The other word that really bugged me this week.
That bugged you? Did it really irritate you?
It did. In fact, it irritated me so much, I would call it an irritator. Except that it wasn't there. This was a word that was not there. The word irritator. And isn't it, I think it was the same, was it the same day? What day was it?
No, irritator was Thursday, the 30th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does that not count? How does that not count?
I don't know. Yeah, I hear you.
It's beyond me. I was like,
I hate the tours. Tours get on my nerves. Imitate tour was there, not irritate tour. Right. And I'm always like, what's a word? What's not a word? Ugh. You know?
They kind of get on my nerves too, because they're very inconsistent. But that one actually is a tour.
It is. There's no irritator. I didn't look this up.
That's the way it is in the dictionary. Irritator with an OR was definitely in there. So I was irritated.
You know what I was irritated by?
What's that?
On Monday the 27th, again, this was a bingo day. So I was like, what's the I? And then I was like, something like India, but it's not. It has a C. And I got to figure out what the frick these stupid words are. And you know, like, it's just annoying. And I think I got indica and then not indicia until I still don't even know. Is it something to do with indicator? I don't even know what the freaking word is.
Yeah. So there are two words. So first of all, for anybody that's listening that doesn't know what a bingo is when there is at least one word that starts with each of the letters in the puzzle. So if you want to know whether a puzzle is a bingo,
look it up on Spelling Bee Solver.
Check on Spelling Bee Solver. Yeah. Exactly.
It's the hint that I do start with. So I say I don't start with any hints, but I always know if it's a bingo. I already always know how many pangrams there are. That's right. Just my thing, people.
So that's what a bingo is. And the words that we're talking about, there are two. One is indica, I-N-D-I-C-A, which is a type of marijuana,
right,
as opposed to sativa. By the way, I wanted to find out whether I was pronouncing indica correctly. So I looked it up and I found some like grasscity.com or something.
Now your internet is broken.
And now my internet is broken. Exactly. Yes. No, and I did not get an actual answer, but I think it's indica. And the other word, which I also looked up how to say it, is
I-N-D-I-C-I-A,
is indicia.
Which is formal and crap.
Well,
sorry.
It's like, you're right. It's indications. It's like markers of something.
Yeah, and it's a Latin word, and it's not a word.
I kind of like it. I'm not going to lie. I kind
of
like
it. Of course you like it, because you like these kind of words. But the point is, should it be in the B, except that we know, like, again, I got it because it's a B word.
Right.
I don't like it.
Yeah, no. I like it. I like it. And I like that it's pronounced indicia.
Indicia. Indicia. If I say it like that, I might like it better, but still. No, not into it.
Well, that same day, China was in the puzzle. C-H-I.
And what's the problem with that?
Don't have a problem with China. I assume it refers to China, like plates, porcelain.
Yeah, of course it does.
I was trying to think, are there any other words in the English language that's a country that we have applied to a thing?
100%, but he does not count it. Well, okay, wait, I'm going to say this and then I'm going to look it up. India.
So what's India?
India Inc. Now, I understand that it's could be like India Inc. is capital, but I don't think so.
But you don't just call it India. That's the thing. China, you just call China.
Oh, they do capitalize.
So
India is capital.
Yeah. So I was trying to think. I think that's the only word that we use that way.
Maybe. But I like
it. It's kind of weird, right?
Well, it makes sense, right? It probably came from like originally this idea of porcelain. And
yeah,
blah,
because
blah, blah.
China ware.
Right.
Right. And then that got shortened. But I just wonder why that didn't, like, why didn't that happen with India Inc. or some other thing that comes from somewhere?
I don't know. I think it should have too. So.
Particularly the India thing is interesting because we said, oh, well, it only goes with ink, like India Inc.
Right.
In addition to it being capitalized, on Saturday, 11/25, the word mung was in
the
puzzle.
Oh, yeah, like mung bean.
Mung bean. Have you ever heard mung not used with bean?
I'm looking it up when we talk about this.
And
well,
nuts,
so a mung is a small round green bean. So you don't have to say mung bean.
Okay,
it's just a mung. And it's the plant that yields the mung bean is a mung plant. So,
well, yeah, I thought that was kind of weird.
Here's an interesting. Did you know mung is also an offensive slang? Not necessarily for anyone specific, but mung means something disgusting or offensive.
Oh, really? Is it because mung beans are gross?
You are ridiculous. Mung beans are good.
I'm just wondering why that would be.
And in Australia, it might mean that you're like high.
Oh,
you're
that's
mung.
Interesting.
This is all like from a very quick Google search, so take what you want from
it. It's interesting, see, because David, one of our listeners who sends us amazing emails about words that are in
and has great thoughts in his emails, I have to say. We always learn something from those emails.
He wanted to know why munging, M-U-N-G-I-N-G, was not included in the puzzle. And
well, he said that that was something that he knew, right?
That exactly, that was something from that, computer sciences.
And so, yeah, I don't think he was suggesting that it should have been in the puzzle. I think he was saying that it's interesting that it really does mean something to a specific group of people.
It's true. And I looked it up beyond what he told us and found out that the word started to be used in the late 1960s. And I'm going to quote this as a somewhat derogatory term for actions and transformations, which progressively degrade a data set. So I think it's interesting because you just said that it's something disgusting and now it's used as a derogatory term in this way. So there's obviously something gross about mung beans.
You're so ridiculous.
So anyway, with mung, David told us this and apparently it has what this one site that I was on, I didn't write down what it was, sorry. They called it a backronym.
Backronym, what's that?
The backronym was MASH until no good, or MUNG until no good. So they're saying it's an acronym that came about after the word started to be used.
Interesting.
I mean, I don't know whether that's like the actual term. And the really weird thing is that now munging means the opposite of that. So when it first started to be used, it was the degradation of a data set. Now it's you say that you're munging data when you're cleaning the data up for use.
Interesting. Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Cool.
Anyway.
Okay.
Fascinating munging.
Can I talk to you about, this is totally off that subject. Yeah. Today, the 1st of December, I can't believe it's December, the Pangram today?
Yeah.
So I got it. Bottle full. But first I said bottle full, F-U-L-L. I did not expect bottle full or bottle full with one L to be there. And when it was, I went, oh, okay. Like, because then I was like, well, why isn't this full or that full? Or
He doesn't count a lot of those.
Why? Like, and bottle full, I looked it up and I was like, all right, like, it's, like it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense why he, I mean, it kind of makes sense to me as a word. Yeah, it makes sense to me as a word, but so do a lot of other fulls that he doesn't count. Like, I think he doesn't count something like roomful or...
Oh, better count roomful, but...
I don't remember what the words are, but I know in the past he has excluded a lot of full words that totally should have been words. And I kind of feel like today he was like, normally I wouldn't count this, but... I kind of want to use it as the Pangram. So
yeah, it was weird. I mean, the sense in Collins is drinking soda by the bottle full, which makes sense, but it's kind of weird.
I think it makes sense. I just think it's like inconsistent with his past behavior.
And now I want to look, is cup full? Yeah, I guess 1L too. I wonder why.
Yeah, they're all 1L.
Why?
Like beautiful.
Why?
I don't know. This is a question.
But like
for
beautiful,
a deep dive.
I guess, is full of beauty.
Yeah.
But like, it's kind of like a, like the beauty part is like shortened, so you shorten the full. But like, this is like cup full, bottle.
All right, well, we're going to find out. Put it on the housekeeping list.
Okay. All right. Anything else we have to talk about?
I just really quickly want to talk about, well, first of all, Tom Tit was in this week.
I love it. On Thursday. Yay. Everyone got it.
I almost
right?
missed buying again on Tuesday, 11/28.
I missed Kamari again on Thursday, the 30th.
Well, I did too, but it's because I didn't finish the puzzle. I did want to talk about one word on Sunday, 11/26. So remember when I had that moment with Wolf where I thought, like, wow, wolf is a really good word in meaning, or wolfing, like wolfing down food.
Sure.
So I had a very similar experience this week on Sunday, 11/26, with the word hightail.
What about it?
Well, it is what it is. Like, an animal puts up its tail and like runs, right? Like, right? Hightail it out of here. It's just like, such a perfect word for us to use as humans.
It's a perfect word for us to use, and also a perfect time to move on.
Hightail it out of here.
You ready to hightail it out of here?
I am.
Let's do it. Let's it's do time it. For the word of the week.
This is the part of the show where we take a deep dive into one word from the previous week's puzzles. We take turns picking the word, finding out about it, and sharing our newfound knowledge. Cecilia likes to think that her deep dives are the best, and I like to think it's because I make them more entertaining by constantly interrupting her.
Mm-hmm. I think the word for that is irritator.
Clearly, Sam has never listened to one of our deep dives, or else he would have included irritator. But so, let's see how much I can irritate you today. What's your word, C?
Well, actually, my word today is going to be a short deep dive because it's a shortened word. And it relates to what I was just talking about full, which is all right.
Ooh, all right. All right.
All right. All right. All right. Yes. So, or I, as I would say in Philadelphia.
That's right. And another word that I was disappointed was not included
well,
in the
beat. Of course, that's not there. But
yeah. No, you know what? I looked it up in the dictionary.
Wait,
it's in
that's
Oxford
a word?
Languages. I Oxford languages, and it's in Collins, and it's in several others.
Interesting. As
not in Merriam-Webster.
Very interesting.
Yep.
Well, so all right was in the Bee on Tuesday, I believe. Oh, no, on Sunday, the same day as Arthralgia, mm-hmm. was the other pangram. And it's A-L-R-I-G-H-T. And of course, it means all right. A-L-L-R-I-G-H-T. And
you're right. This was the fastest deep dive ever.
Yeah, yes. Not well. And so when I got it, first, I tried to put in all right, A-L-L-R-I-G-H-T is one word, and that wasn't there. And then I was like, A-L-R-I-G-H-T, and I got it. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
And I was surprised. And I found out the reason I was surprised is because that's weird to write all right.
No, but it's one. Not because all right
stop.
Is two words.
Okay. Not irritator. So all right, A-L-L-R-I-G-H-T, is the way that we were taught to write all right. Okay. All right. A-L-R-I-G-H-T is a word, but mostly it's an informal writing and was considered like wrong by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So it showed up originally for the first time in a Mark Twain story, The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras
what?
County,
never
which was published in 1865. What's weird is I feel like we talked about that story as being something else, but who knows? Anyway, so
I don't even understand what you just said.
Okay, so when I heard the story, I was like, isn't this like this has something to do with some other word? I thought like the first time this was considered a word, but I don't remember. Okay. So anyway, basically, all right was always all and right. Mm-hmm. Until 1865.
Okay.
Okay. And then Mark Twain writes all right as one word with mm-hmm. one L. And that apparently starts the discussion mm-hmm. about like, can we write it that way? Now, what's interesting is in like the 1700s, yeah. people had already decided that other words that could be two words, like already uh-huh. or although, were one word.
Right.
READ already, or although, ALTHOUGH. And that's totally normal. And nobody writes all ready to mean already, or although to mean although, uh-huh. right?
Isn't that's that very interesting. I never even only, put that together.
All right is actually the only of these words that developed a variant modern spelling after huh. the 18th century.
That is quite fascinating.
Which is why... Yeah, and that's why now we're so frustrated with this idea of like, can you use all right?
Well,
and for a long time, the answer was no, that you couldn't. But now it's becoming more acceptable that it's your personal choice, that if you want to say all right, A-L-R-I-G-H-T, you can. And if you want to say all right, A-L-L-R-I-G-H-T is two separate words, you can. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Both are
all right.
All right.
All right.
So I know I didn't let you interrupt me a ton, Jen, but that is the deep dive.
I tried and you stopped me.
I really had to because it was clear and quick.
All right. I liked it. Brava. See, to use another word from
I
this week.
Brava. I can't believe we didn't even talk about that.
You know what else we didn't talk about? Brain.
Yeah? Why?
Braining.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was glad that was in there.
I wanted to talk about braining. You did yeah. not brain me this week, but you did blow my mind.
Oh, and listeners, if you thought that was mind-blowing, just wait till you hear what's next. It's unbelievable words.
Unbelievable words is a short, snappy segment with big impact.
This is a chance for us to introduce some new non-bee vocab to the show.
We tell the word, spell the word, define it, and give a sample sentence. See, perhaps you would like to demonstrate by way of sharing your word.
Sure. My word is drintling. So Jen is laughing because she knows why I wanted this word. On Thanksgiving, I was playing balderdash with my family, as you probably know because you heard about it last week. And one of the words we got was drintling. And the definition in balderdash was what you call two or more turkeys. Mm-hmm. So I told Jen this and suggested that we use it last week. And then she looked it up and saw that that is not the definition that's in any dictionary. Instead, the definition is that drintling is the clucking or gobbling sound that turkeys make.
Yes.
Weird, right? I do not yes. understand why. Drintling definitely has to do with turkeys. And in balderdash, it's two or more turkeys. For sure.
I believe you.
But Anyway, drintling, D-R-I-N-T-L-I-N-G, the clucking or gobbling sound that turkeys make. Drintling, 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 I guess. Weird, right?
I don't know. It's really weird. I'm like trying to figure out how you would, do you have a sentence for it?
The turkeys were drintling and really bugging me because I couldn't hear myself think.
It's a noun, isn't it? Is it a verb?
It is a noun.
The turkey drintling was driving me mad.
Okay, that works. Good.
Yeah, that's weird. And you know what? I don't actually trust Balderdash anymore.
Oh,
the only thing I can think of.
Before you trusted it so much?
Well, no, but I took for granted that they fact checked their meanings. But here's the thing. Then I looked up Gus's word, Lirapoop, from last week.
Uh-huh.
And although it is kind of can be used for the tassel on your hat, it's really not the tassel on a graduation hat. It's really the like long part of a different kind of academic hat. So I think Balderdash is a little bit off.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Mwah.
Anyway. I think right. It is what my word is.
Okay.
My word is shambolic.
Shambolic. I know
you
this
do?
Word.
What does it mean?
Of course. Where did you come across shambolic, just out of curiosity?
I came across shambolic in a Brennan Center newsletter about Donald.
Wait, what did you just call? What words were those?
A Brennan Center newsletter. So the Brennan Center is a nonpartisan pro-democracy law and policy institute, the Brennan Center for Justice. And I get their newsletter in my inbox.
Uh-huh.
And the last newsletter was about Donald Trump's plans to overthrow democracy if he gets a second term, and they use the word shambolic.
So that's interesting, because I think of shambolic as being kind of a mess.
Yes, that's what it is.
So I feel like he has less than just messy plans. I feel like he has very specific
well
plans.
Let me tell you how it was used. I'm going to give you the sample definition. So it is an adjective, and for those of you who don't know the word, it means confused, chaotic, disorganized, or mismanaged.
Right,
I did not know the word. And the sentence that it was used in, they were talking about him invoking the Insurrection Act. And then they said, in 2020, of course, Trump himself engineered a shambolic insurrection.
Well, that is true. Yeah. That's a good way to use the word.
Yeah.
I like that.
And I saw that and I was like, that's a great word. And I immediately was like, that's my word of the week.
That's awesome, Jen. I like your word. And you know what I like about today's episode?
What's that?
It just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah. And the trend continues because our special guest is here for our final segment.
It's the Wild Card
with Tim Elborn.
Listeners, as you know, the Wild Card is the part of the show that changes from week to week. And this week, we are especially excited to be joined by Dr. Timothy Elborn.
A Harvard-trained historian, Tim is a professor at CUNY's Lehman College, where he runs an MA program in liberal studies. Academically, Tim's expertise is modern European history, within which his bailiwick is British history of the 18th and 19th centuries. But his interests outside of academe are wide-ranging. Among his claims to fame, Tim founded the indie pop record label Harriet Records, which released 10 CDs and 45 singles in the 1990s and recently made a comeback. And from 2004 to 2007, he penned over 1,000 limericks for the Omnificent English Dictionary in Limerick Form, earning him the title OEDILF Anapestarian Supreme.
Anapestarian.
And of course, today he is the unofficial bard of the New York Times Spelling Bee, offering up a bee-inspired poem on social media every single day. Tim, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us here today.
It's my pleasure.
Tim, we got started today talking about your limericks and how we really, really, really wanted to hear your limerick on arthralgia. So I think like there's no better way to introduce you than ask you to start with that. If you don't mind, would you read it to us?
Sure. This is just from a few days ago. You might remember it showing up in the Bee. And these are mostly words in the Bee. What I do is I include at least 5 words from the Spelling Bee in my limericks each time. I alight on all right in my lair. Yet one highlight still tangles my hair. It's a pain in the joint that's worth 17 points. With its girth, I'll unearth it. But where?
That was great.
So we have a lot of questions about your limericks, Tim. See, do you want to start unpacking
that? Well, why don't you just start telling us about how you got involved in writing limericks and then decided to write limericks about the bee. You were writing limericks, obviously, before you wrote bee limericks, yes?
Yes. You mentioned the OEDILF, ODILF, which started in 2004. And I was kind of there at the beginning, close to the beginning. A friend of mine told me it was going on. And I'd never really written limericks before, but I really liked words and rhymes. And I'm a big fan of music. So I just jumped in. And it was, it's kind of a fascinating project. It's still going on. It's up to the letter H. It's a very slow moving project, but the idea is to write at least one limerick and usually several for every word in the English language. And it was up to the letter C when I stopped, but that was like 4 years in. Wow. And I wrote about 1,000 limericks for them. And then off and on, I've been writing limericks just for family and for, you know, different occasions. But yeah, and then Spelling Bee started. I've been playing that for since 2019 or so. Not too long after it started on the you know, the iPhone version. Mm-hmm. And my wife told me about this Facebook group, New York Times Spelling Bee Facebook group.
Yep.
And I joined that, and it basically just looked like different people in the group had different things they did on a regular basis.
You said, I know what I do.
Yeah, I can do this. And the Spelling Bee is really well suited for limerick writing because there's a lot of rhymes in the words in the bee because, mm-hmm. you know, same letters. And there's a lot of assonance. There's a lot of alliteration that you can do. And so, yeah, it just worked out. And I started posting every day and people kind of figured it out eventually. And it's been pretty popular. So I've kept doing
it. Awesome. So every day you said you have 5 words or so, or are they always exactly 5 words or at least?
You know, okay. Yeah.
Okay. And then there's pictures that go with them too?
Yeah. I realized pretty quickly that because of the way Facebook works, no one was reading them when I didn't post a picture with them. So that's kind of part of it. I just go and do a Google image search, and I could never publish anything because the pictures are all not, you know, I don't have permission for them, but I guess that's okay on Facebook. But I find something that, you know, that corresponds with the limerick I wrote. And sometimes I stitch a couple images together, but pretty simple stuff. People are kind of sometimes very easily impressed on Facebook, but you know, I'm good at finding things. I'm a historian and I'm good at research. And yeah. So that's kind of extra.
I have a question taking us back to that arthralgia limerick. How do you pick a word to anchor your limerick? And that was a really brave choice.
You notice it wasn't actually in the limerick, although originally it was. With that one, that was the last word I got with hints, mm-hmm. and I didn't know what it meant. Yeah. So I figured it had something to do with arthritis and, you know, pain. So I looked it up, and I immediately... Mm-hmm. The middle rhyme came to me, which doesn't have any words in the bee, but a pain in the joints that's worth 17 points because it was worth 17 points, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And because it was a long pangram. Mm-hmm. And once I had that, it's like, well, that's going to be the limerick. This one was clearly going to be a limerick about the bee, which not all of them are. That's actually easier to write in a way because I can, you know, the words don't have to really mean anything apart from they were in the bee. So I alight on all right in my lair. Yeah. I liked the tangles my hairline. Mm-hmm. That was kind of fun. So I was going to include all arthralgia in the last line, but then I thought, well, the whole point of this is I didn't find it.
Which is kind
of a true story in this case. So so I thought I would just call the limerick that and leave it with like, where the heck is this word?
So do you always write the limerick right after you do the bee, or is there like a time when you write the limerick? Does it always post at the same time?
It posts in the following morning.
Okay.
So to avoid spoilers.
Sure.
It depends. Sometimes I think up a limerick halfway through the bee, and I might, you know, trade out words if I come up with different words that fit better. Sometimes I have a limerick in mind after I finish, and then I throw it out in the morning if something better comes to me. But by and large, I usually have something written down before I go to bed at night, and then the first thing I do in the morning is post it.
Nice. So have you missed a day?
Oh, yeah. I take breaks.
Okay.
Work gets in the way, or I just kind of get burned out. I've taken up to 2 or 3 months off, but you know, like you guys do, and with your
we go on hiatus.
But yeah, I mean, I come back. It's kind of ironic because I get more likes on Facebook when I announce I'm going away than I do when I come back, which is not necessarily a good thing. But yeah, and like I say, I get about, you know, 4 or 5 dozen people, well, 6 or 7 dozen people like my post each day that I do it. And so I figure, you know.
I mean, the way we found you is that when we talked to the Facebook moderators, I think every single one was like, oh my God, you have to talk to Tim. So, you were very much.
Yeah. Well, the regulars definitely, you know, they pay attention. And I think, you know, I think I interact with the bee the same way a lot of the regulars in that group do, which is we are very fond of the bee and of each other. And I think that's what I try to do in my limericks is to kind of make gentle fun of both Sam, but also people, you know, the process of solving the puzzle and complaining about the puzzle and all the rest.
Right.
And I think it kind of, you know, like you guys do in your podcast. Right. And so I think it, it blends in with the way people interact with each other in that group.
Yeah. That's awesome. I still have endless questions about the actual process of the limerick writing. And it sounds like it varies from day to day what that process is. But do you like identify which words you want in the limerick before you start writing it? Or is it much more organic than that?
I usually start with 3 or 4 words that I know I want to include. And then I work around that, you know, finding rhymes that work. I mean, I use this website called Rhyme Zone a lot, which is basically this online rhyming dictionary. And friends of mine who are songwriters, you know, use rhyming dictionaries. So I figure, you know, that's okay. And I think that I do have kind of reoccurring characters. So Nana, I've got written like 30 limericks about my fictional Nana, because Nana shows up all the time in the bee, of course.
Yeah.
And so that's a favorite. I think there are a lot of Nanas in the Facebook group. They rather appreciate that character. Who my Nana in this, both my grandmothers are dead, but my Nana in my limericks is a very strange character. Very adventurous character.
Elaborate.
He's been married like 9 or 10 times.
Wait, has she gotten married in the limericks?
Sometimes. Yeah. I did a Tom Tit manifesto a while ago saying that whenever Tom Tit is in the bee, it's going to be in one of my limericks.
Awesome. You have quite a number of Tom Tit.
Yeah.
This week.
I mean, they don't show up all the time, but when they do, you know, they deserve a limerick. So it really depends in terms of if there's a word that I really want to use, I will use it and I'll kind of frame the limerick around it. Sometimes, you know, to be honest, it's like, gotta write a limerick. Find 5 words. You know, when that happens too much in a row, I might take a break. So
and maybe you move to holiday music, which I need to hear about. So you write holiday music related to the bee.
I started doing these limericks in early 2021, and by the end of that year, it really just kind of happened by chance, because there was a, so the 1st of December, 2021, there was a word in the bee, ribby, which was like a weird adjective that I didn't know was a real word, you know.
I think we talked about that one.
Yeah. And so it just, the thought occurred to me of, well, ribby is kind of a word that all the other adjectives might not want to play with him. And so I wrote a limerick, which is like Ribby the something, or, you know, to the tune of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And, and Ribby was the Rudolph character. And everyone liked it. And so I thought, oh, well, I could do these. And so I did those that December. They did them again last December and starting up again this year.
So we might have an exclusive.
I can read you. I'll read you. I mean, they're long, so, but I can read you a couple lines from today's.
Today. December 1st, 2023 exclusive.
When we're taping, it's to the tune of Away in the Manger, and it starts with Away on a cell phone. No pangram is found. But, and I actually don't have it in front of me, but something, something, something abound. And then roll out the tatami, 3 tits for a tat, a trio of tom tits asleep on the mat. And then a Lee and Acacia, Kawati awakes, the spelling bee giveth, the spelling bee takes.
Love it.
Bravo, bravo. That was awesome. Tim, do you sing?
No.
I was getting
someone once said, you know, I want to hear you sing your Christmas carols. And I said, no, you don't.
Well, the reason I asked you is because I too write bee Christmas carols, only I mostly keep them to myself. And sometimes I tell Cecilia about them and tell her that we have to sing them, and she says no to me. So I was hoping that you had like a bee Christmas choir somewhere.
Well, there has been talk in the group about going around caroling with what I wrote, and I don't know if anyone's ever done that. But who knows? But
okay, well, it's a project, Jen.
And people do tell me they sing along when they're reading. So
absolutely. I think maybe it's time to get a bee choir going. I might take the lead on that one.
How many more holiday songs are there going to be?
Well, I'll do it this time. I usually do about 20 each year, and then I take a break for Christmas.
Oh, there's a ton. I didn't realize
that. Oh, no, I do them every year, every day. Yeah.
December for the rest of December.
Holiday season.
Have you done one for God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen?
One of our favorites.
I am pretty sure I have. That was actually one of
that, Jen.
Yeah, people liked that one. The middle verse was great. God rest ye merry gentlemen, the waiters you harangue, a gaggle more of geese du jour, another round of tang. This eaglet stew is gamey. Ew, it's not like P.F. Chang. Vexation genteel and mean, genteel and mean, vexation genteel and mean. And then they end up not paying the bill.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Tim, you are very prolific, which is impressive. Do you think you're just going to keep going and going? Do you have like, will you ever go into retirement? I don't want you to, but like, are there other places that you want to go with the bee in words, or what are you thinking about?
Oh, no. I mean, I have a lot of other irons in the fire that have nothing to do with spelling bee. I'll keep doing this in the Facebook. I mean, the Facebook group is like a good audience for this and a good place to do this. Mm-hmm. I see it kind of as a extension of doing the bee itself. It's entertaining and fun and, you know, diverting. And I'm going to keep doing this as long as it, you know, is fun for me. And that'll be for, you know, at least another year or two or more. But no, not beyond that. I mean, I do all these other things. I write books, I teach, I run a record label.
Yeah, tell us a little bit. I mean, we did talk about it in the beginning, and we do want to get back to the bee, but I know that you especially are excited about your Master's of Arts in Liberal Studies program that you do, right?
Yeah, I kind of resurrected it about 10 years ago, and it's a great program to run. It's older students typically who are kind of in the workforce already, and they either take the program just because they want to learn more or they want to get promoted at work and that kind of thing. We got some retirees, and I kind of help them find instructors at my college to take classes from. It's a self-designed program. I teach the first year course and just kind of guide them through the program. And it's small, you know, 8 or 9 people each year come in, and it's just really, really gratifying to work with students on that individual basis and help them. And it's really kind of the way I approach scholarship, which is interdisciplinary. And I'm equally at home in English literature as I am in history or in sociology, for instance. And so it's a good program for me to run. And I think, you know, we are always looking for more students. So if you're in the New York area, look it up, MALS Lehman College.
Well, Tim, you might be getting an application from me wanting to come and do a master's on the history of word games.
Yeah, I mean, there would be people. We don't have any courses on that at my college, but there would be people who could work with you.
Yeah, I mean, Will Schwartz designed his own major
in Indiana, right?
Enigmatology.
Yeah.
And I've always been like, wow, I wish I would have thought of that. And now I'm thinking this might be my next phase in life.
Tim, are you also like a super word puzzle doer in other parts of your life, or is the bee really the word puzzle you do and that's it?
No, I do others. My daily schedule is I get up in the morning, I take a bath, I kind of tweak the limerick I wrote in my head while I'm in the bath. I post it. I do spelling bee until I get to genius, and then I stop. I do Wordle, and then I start my day. Okay. And usually do the New York Times crossword at lunch, and I play Scrabble on the subway because I don't need the internet to be on for that. So yeah, I kind of spend a lot of my downtime doing word games. And so yeah, I really enjoy doing them. it's a little different. I play with words in different ways in the rest of my life, but the stakes are higher. So yeah, it's fun. And it's also fun being part of this group. Mm-hmm. You know, my feeling is that, and this is the case with word games too, is we're all kind of in the modern world. If we work at it, you know, the kind of job I work at, we're all in our own specialized fields where we all have our own vocabularies, mm-hmm. really. And it's great to be part of a group where everyone has their own different vocabulary, but they can all come together and talk about the same 50 words each day.
Yeah.
I like that. And I just like the fact that there's a place for people who love language, mm-hmm. both to get together and talk about it, but also just to kind of sit by themselves and wallow in that few minutes each day.
There are two questions that we thought of because you are an expert both in the history of science and British history. So in thinking about words that you think that everybody knows or talking to, you know, words that should or shouldn't be in the spelling bee, how do you feel both about Sam's science word choices and his approach to British English words? Any thoughts on either or both of those subjects?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a scientist, so my knowledge of technical science words is probably not much greater than the average person, but I think he does a pretty good job on that. I mean, the words he accepts are not so hard that they'd be impossible for a non-scientist, but they're, you know, they push you a little bit. He includes all chemical elements, mm-hmm. which is good. I'd be very unhappy if he didn't, but yeah, I can tell that a lot of people in this, at least in the group that I'm in, would wish he didn't have any science words at all. but yeah. And for the British English, he can't really do that because it would double the number of words whenever there's an OR in the puzzle, you know, et cetera. Yeah. And I kind of was bothered by it for a while, but I console myself that when I do Scrabble, I use the Collins English Dictionary, which lets me use English spellings then, at least.
I like that approach. Are there any words? So I hadn't thought about this before. Are there any history, sort of historian jargon words that either are included in the B or are not included in the B that you think about? And I'm thinking about it because, so I'm an art historian, Tim, and mm-hmm. I really like it when occasionally we get a word like mezzotint or limb or something like that. And I know that they're not words that most people know, so I feel kind of bad about it, but I'm also happy. Do you have any history words like that?
Yeah, I can't think of any off the top of my head that he counts, although there have been some, I'm sure. And I think, again, that's one of the nice things about the B is that genius is kind of like most people are pretty happy if they get mm-hmm. that. And then, you know, the rest is icing on the cake. And so if there's a word here and there that I've never heard of before, I'm like, well, now I know it, you know, I'm not really annoyed. But there are words. I think the words you remember are more the ones that he doesn't count. There is a word deodand, which there's no reason anyone should know it. It's like a legal term from the 19th century. Oh. I don't even remember what it means now, but I was like, oh, I could. Yeah. You know, there's this moment of excitement where, oh, I can use this word. And then, of course, you can't. But there's quite a lot. The further back in time you go, like fiof doesn't work and mm-hmm. a lot of things like that. But that's okay. It's almost as fun just to, you know, recognize it in the B, whether it counts or not.
That's true. Do you have any favorite B words?
I more have kind of favorite characters because I kind of connect writing the limericks with doing the B. And so, you know, Tom Tit is it again. Mm-hmm. I love the baboon bonobo pair. Whenever they show up, I try to include them, often sitting on a baobab branch and playing the oboe or whatever, you know. So that's one of them, or one pair of them. I mean, there's words I don't like. I don't like all the Italian food.
Mm. Oh.
I'm sure I would like eating it, but I just don't know where the C's go, and I'm not a cook, so I have
fettuccine gravy problems.
No, that's fine. I got that. I even spelled it right.
But, oh, wow. Oh, wow.
But all those other ones.
That's a good, you know, you made me think of how much it must help to remember the words if you think of them as pairs, you know, because often I complained before on the show that I always get to Tommy and I for a while was always missing Tamari, and Jen said, well, you just got to think of them together, Tatami, yeah, Tamari. Yeah. I mean, they're not always together, but often
like you
they
sit
are.
On your Tatami and eat your Tamari.
Right.
Yeah, so, and Acacia and Asai, and yeah, all of those. Yeah. And, you know, and to be honest, writing limericks helps remember them too, because if it shows up, it's like, you know, it's like you remember song lyrics better than prose poetry or something, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, speaking of songs, just to get back to music, maybe tell us, because you're obviously a big music fan and you're a big word fan, like, how do those two loves fit together for you?
Oh, they totally fit together. I was just having a conversation with a friend of mine who does history of popular music at CUNY. And we have completely opposite approaches to music. I love lyrics, and they're like the be all and end all of the song. And the music is kind of important, but secondary. And she's just the opposite. And so the lyrics are really important. The bands I've worked with on my record label are usually bands with really smart lyrics. Mm. And when I'm listening to music, I'm paying a lot of attention to the rhymes and the lyrics. And so it really connects and makes it a lot easier for me to write limericks, which are very rhyme oriented, because I'm always thinking in terms of rhymes, right? It comes easy to me doing these song parodies because I have a good feel for rhythm in my head and I have a good feel for rhyme in my head.
Do you have music playing in your head when you do these, or just?
Well, I mean, when I'm doing a parody of a song, I think of the tune while I'm writing, certainly.
What about with limericks?
No.
There's no music playing, huh?
I can't think of any kind of limerick that's been put to song. Put
oh,
to
I think
music.
Tim just issued us a challenge, Cecilia.
I'm pretty sure.
If you listen to the show next week, Tim, you're going to hear Cecilia and I trying to put your limericks to music.
Okay, I will look forward to that. I think I was inspired when I was a kid. I read Mad Magazine, eight-year-olds did, and they would do these song parodies, which were really, really fun for me. And I've done a few song parodies, you know, non-holiday related.
Have you written songs that are not parodies?
Not really. I mean, I try to stick to light verse as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I think that's partly I enjoy doing it more, but I think that's what people are kind of like expecting. What I've done sonnets, which are usually kind of in the light verse mode. I've done villanelles, which are, I didn't even know what a villanelle was, but it showed up in the B. It was on Valentine's Day, 2022, that a villanelle showed up in the B, and Valentine was in the same B. And so I wrote one then about someone whose heart is broken, basically, for my first ever villanelle. I thought it was pretty good. And so those tend to be a little darker because I think the form works better for that. The sonnets are usually kind of funny, but they're sometimes a little darker. I've done some limericks that are more kind of barbed political commentary, but mostly I stick to light verse and kind of humorous.
Now, I know this might be asking you to like pick your favorite child, but do you have like, if we're going to go out on one limerick, do you or villanelle, you can pick, I know it's a little longer. Could you pick one that maybe we could go out on?
Yeah, I don't know. It is hard. It's like asking me what my favorite song is, which is always different each day. This is one I wrote just a couple months ago, September, and it's a good example of what the classic limerick is, which is a little naughty with a double entendre using wordplay and puns. So this was the pangram that day was Hayfork. And this one also had a good picture because I found the American Gothic painting with the farmer and his hayfork and his sour looking wife. So this is from the point of view of the farmer's wife who thinks the farmer maybe is a little too attached to his hayfork. So your hayfork's fantastic, okay? I applaud it, hurrah and hooray. But we're hosting four fora, then dancing a hora. So get the fork out of our way.
Hurrah, hurrah, hooray. Listeners, if you want more Tim poetry, join the New York Times Spelling Bee Facebook group or check out his limericks at sblimericks.commons.gc.cuny.edu.
You can shop and follow Harriet Records at harrietrecords.bandcamp.com. And you can pick up one of Tim's books, the latest of which is Misers, British Responses to Extreme Saving, 1700 to 1860, published by Routledge in 2022, available in hardback and ebook, and currently available for pre-order in paperback. So, you know, if you know anybody who likes British history and is interested in misers, holiday present.
Thanks for letting me know about that. My editor didn't tell me the paperback was coming out.
Thanks so much for joining us, Tim.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. It was very much fun.
Lots of fun to talk to you.
And that's it for this episode of Tomtit and Baobab.
Thanks for being with us. We hope you'll be back again next week. We drop a new episode of T&B every Monday.
Until then, be in touch. You can find us on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. You can also email us at tomtitandbaobab@gmail.com.
We want to know all about the bees you like, bees you hate, words you missed, and words you'd like to know about.
And if you also fancy yourself a poet, send us some of your work. We might just read it on the show.
If you like T&B and never want to miss an episode, subscribe or follow us. And if you're listening on Spotify, don't forget to answer the Q&A and take the poll.
Last but not least, please take a moment to leave a rating or a review. This helps other word nerds and puzzle lovers find our very indie podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.